Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. We were talking about, was some mention of yoga cities? Where did that come in? Hold on. Well, when they saw the body of Narayan, his body was endowed with all perfection, siddhi, which is glossed by Jiva Goswami as anima and so on. The mystic powers were all present within the body of Narayan when the four Kumaras saw him. And they're yogis. So yogis are very attracted to something that interests yogis to see, to find the cities. They were all there in the body of Narayan. Now, what about cities? Are they good or bad? Well, there's discussion of it now, of the mystic cities. 78.23.
We didn't finish
22,
which is 13, and then last month time.
Okay.
Well,
yeah,
okay.
We'll go back.
We did it, but we had two questions.
Okay, yes, right. We have questions left over. I think, are the questions here? Okay.
Yeah. One question was, who is Sanat Kumar speaking to in the Chandogya Upanishad? So I
You looked it up.
It's Narada Muni.
He's talking to Narada.
Yeah.
Narada's getting instructions from him?
That's the same chapter where he says, I've read the four Vedas, the fifth Veda, everything.
And Narada says that.
Yeah. And then Sanat Kumar is instructing him about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, ultimately.
Yes. Okay, but it's devotional instructions.
Yeah.
Great.
Although, I read it with Madhvacharya's commentary, but the text in itself is kind of very dense and difficult to extract the, an outsider who reads it will just understand, oh, great, of meditation. But what it actually means, according to Madhvacharya, is that devotional understanding.
Okay. Yes. Okay, now were there any questions left? Sorry.
Just another yesterday's previous this beginning of discussion we discussed about this Brahmana conscience. So what is the conclusive argument that if the Mayavadi says that there is no evidence of anybody experienced Brahmananda in being in the Brahmajyoti and fallen down, taken to spiritual life? I mean, devotional life. So, because as you say that, they say that Sukadeva Goswami and others are still dragging the body around them, so they will not be, according to them, as a candidate. We propose that they have taken a devotional service.
Yeah, well, they don't talk about those who, what do you call them? Yeah, leave the country.
Expatriates.
Not expatriates. No. When you defectors, defectors from the Mayavadi camp, they don't really discuss that. They discuss just the principle that nobody's ever going to come back from Brahmana realization. They don't talk about those who actually did, or whether they don't get into that embarrassing topic. Yeah. We talk about it. We are not ashamed to embarrass them. and point out that actually your so-called Paramahamsas aren't liberated. Look what they're doing. But they just avoid that topic. Yes, because they haven't seen, Shankaracharya assumes one who takes sannyas is liberated, period. And he doesn't, you know, it's an axiom, so he doesn't want to consider any contradictory examples. Yes. Shankaracharya, who's leader of most of the Mayavadis, his basic assumption is that one who takes sannyas is liberated, or at least jivan mukta. He's not going to fall down. So he doesn't even consider cases of sannyasis, Mayavadi sannyasis, deviating, because he doesn't consider it a possibility. They're not just candidates for liberation, they're liberated as far as Shankaracharya is concerned. So whatever they do, we may not understand what they're doing, but they're transcendental. That's what they assume. So-and-so Swami did this and did that, looks like he fell down. Shankaracharya's position would be that, no, he didn't. You think he fell down, but you don't understand.
Also,
how
you position that Shukadev, just because he was here, he was not liberated there for his to.
No, but he's jivan mukta. Yes.
His defense into Vaishnava camp is invalidated by just his being in the physical body. We could also argue to that if you say that if somebody is just in the physical body, because of that he's not liberated, then it invalidates whatever we actually know about Mayavada philosophy. Because it was spoken by
Shankaracharya
and other embodied beings, and therefore, unless you manage to speak somehow to that dissolved jiva who has the experience of Brahman, then you cannot really know what liberation is, and therefore, you don't have any actual experience of any actual knowledge about liberation. So it validates the whole body of Mayavada knowledge.
Yes. It validates everything. It validates the Vedas, it validates the Bhagavad Gita, and everything.
Yes,
that all the avatars of the Lord are said, because they're just illusions.
So they have to admit that one can be liberated soul but still have a
yeah. Liberation. They just say it's not ultimate liberation, it's a jivan mukta. But I think they won't even allow that a jivan mukta can fall down. Even though he's still in the body, he's perfect, he's just using up the traces of his prarabdha karma. And if he's not really liberated, and what is he? You know, it's not, where's the mukta, jivan mukta, if he's not really liberated?
And that's what he says, doesn't have any value.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But the Mayavadi presentation doesn't really make logical sense. Okay, anything else? Okay, now we go into 23. About the cities. Asananu bhavasyaiva tu siddhasyani madibir vignopi sambhavyaha natu siddhanu bhavasya. There is possibility that the mystic perfections of anima and so on may create obstruction to progress for an expert practitioner who is on the verge of full realization, but not for one who has actually achieved that realization. Yeah. Okay, that's what it says. I'm trying to understand why he's saying this. We're not talking about Narayana, we're talking about the Kumaras. Then this is Iti Kapila David Vakya. This is supported. This conclusion is supported by the statement of Sri Kapiladeva. Tam sapapancham adiruda samadhi yoga swapnam punarna panjate pratibundhavastu. Swapnam means the material life that's like a dream. But he's awakened to pratibuddha vastu. He's awakened to the reality. so he doesn't go back into his material dream. The person who has achieved the stage of mature trance does not turn again to the body and its expansions. They are like a dream, and he has awakened to reality. Okay, so we're talking here, this is why we're saying this, we're talking about the Kumaras. They're liberated, Brahman realized. They're actually Brahman realized. Not just rubber stamp Paramahamsas, they're real Paramahamsas. So, mystic cities should not cause them deviation, nor should they deviate in any way. And I don't understand why we're talking about mystic cities here. And let's continue the paragraph and see if it's clarified, if it's clarified. Ata eva te sham padvasta maya guna beda mohana krodharikam api durgata katana karinya shri bhagavad ichayaiva jata iti tire api vyakyatam. Therefore, Sridhar Swami has also explained, tire vakyatam. It's been explained by them. Them is a respectful reference to Sridhar Swami. Therefore, Sridhar Swami has also explained in his commentary that the anger of the Kumaras, for whom the illusion of duality created by the material moons had already become dissolved. Their anger could only have been produced by the desire of the divine personality of Godhead, which desire of the Lord has the power to make the unlikely feasible. Durgatana gatana. Durgata gatana. What's impossible, it makes possible. The desire energy. The desire shakti of the Lord. So, I guess the argument is that such liberated sages are not distracted even by mystic powers, perfections of yoga. What to speak of some material obstacle? Nothing should make them angry. They're not obstructed even by magic, because it's very hard not to be distracted by mystic powers. If you're given godly powers to create planets and bring anybody under your will, if your desires are not pure, you're going to get into serious trouble having such powers. But even such powers that sages on Tapoloka, like the Kumaras, have, they can create things and control other entities as they wish. But they don't become distracted. They don't become monsters or despots or exploiters of others. They avoid that danger because they're actually liberated. So what to speak of them getting angry at someone who doesn't let them in the gate? They shouldn't be subject to ordinary frustrations. Well, okay. Continuing, tadevam tesham satata brahmananda magnatvam siddham. Thus it is proven that these sages were always merged in the bliss of Brahman. They actually were Brahman realized. There is Brahmananda. That's what the Kumaras were experiencing before they met Narayan. There is such a thing, real Brahmananda. Real liberated sages like the Kumaras experience it. But they're rare personalities. Most impersonalists are fakes. They're not actually liberated. But there are a few who are. But you see, these few that we know about, Shukadev, Kumaras, they're becoming devotees. The ones who are actually liberated. Okay, and this is indicated by statements. Taruktam. Akshara jusham api iti and yo antarhita iti adicha. This is as indicated that this is proof that the sages were actually Brahman realized and merged in the bliss of Brahman. Proven as indicated by the phrases. Oh boy. Not the phrases as, such phrases as. Okay. Even though they took their pleasure in the infallible, that's from the previous verse, and the verse beginning, he who remains invisible. Okay, let's look up that verse. He Yom Tar Hita. What's the first reference for that? 1535. Okay, I'm sorry, it's not it. Yom Tar Hita. What is it, wrong number? 46. Okay, let me try 46. Got it, 46. Yom Tor Hita Ridi Gato Pudura Manam Twam Sadyo Sodyaiva No Nayanamula Manam Taradaha Yari Vakarna Vivarina Muham Batonaha Pitranu Harni Tavaha Bavarun Bavena. The Kumaris said, our dear Lord, you are not manifest to rascals, even though you are seated within the heart of everyone. But as far as we are concerned, we see you face to face, although you are unlimited. The statements we have heard about you from our father Brahma through the ears have now actually been realized by your kind appearance. That is a corroboration of the conclusion that they're actually liberated. They're talking about themselves, although they're humble devotees. They're talking about, frankly, how they were not like rascals. We actually have realized you. We heard about you from our father. We were Brahman realized. So they're admitting it. Is that okay? Okay, this is just picking up evidence in the previous verses spoken by Brahma and then by the Kumaras themselves. Evidence, further evidence that they actually were liberated in experiencing Brahmananda. Okay. Short commentary. The Kumaras were already fully realized as impersonalists. They could not have been an illusion. And only an illusion could they have offended Vaishnavas. A liberated soul is never offensive. So what happened? It was actually the Lord's arrangement. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done such an offensive thing as get angry at the gatekeepers. Somebody like me could do that. Get angry at someone who, you know, doesn't do exactly what you want. But a liberated soul doesn't do that. Yes?
Maybe this has always been answered because I kind of been in class for the last month. So the question is that the fact that they're fully realized as impersonalists doesn't mean that they don't have some kind of illusion, not external, but they still don't know the relationship with the Lord and therefore the second part of the definition of liberation, so the kind of elasticity is not fulfilled. Therefore they have some kind of
You could say that it's an illusion, or you could be generous and say that it's just incomplete realization.
Because there is some ignorance of who they actually are.
Yeah, but every living entity is going to have some ignorance. Even the devotees in Vaikuntha don't know everything about the Lord. They don't know about Goloka. Do you say that they're an illusion?
No, but their ignorance, not ignorance, but their state of existence in the community is their original state of perfection. And just as we said, the Lord just doesn't reveal to them the kind of personality which is not favorable to their power, but for them impersonalism is not their Svarupa. It's a fallen state still compared to their Svarupa.
Well, it's an incomplete state. I wouldn't say it's a fallen state. Maybe we should use the term illusion to mean material illusion. Because we start talking about spiritual illusions, then we're talking about Yogamaya. And what do we, you know, we want to call the consciousness of impersonal actual realization, actual Brahman realization. Call that illusory, then I don't know, that's sort of difficult, because then devotees also go through that phase. You know, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, devotees become Brahman realized and then they move on. So does that mean they, you know, part of their education is to be deluded?
No, it's just like the creeper of bhakti grows to certain stages, but creepers.
So it goes through the Brahmajyoti, as
yes, it does. But they don't get stuck there. I think Prabhupada, his letter to, what is it, Madhu Visha?
Yeah.
About Kapanya, he says that Brahman is already in one state.
Okay, okay. It's like, yes, it's technically true, but it's sort of not, you know, if you're talking about a respectable person, it's not a nice thing to say that they're an illusionary.
Yeah,
just the attitude is a little harsh. So
especially
it's true.
Especially something like me says, Kumaras, of course, it's... But I just want to actually ask about the second part of this statement, which comes from the question with the Shridhar Swami's commentary, of course, is that if they didn't have complete realization and they didn't know exactly the glories of Vaishnavas,
yes,
and they didn't know actually the authentic nature of Krishna's service because they haven't realized it yet, before they met the Lord and breathed the aroma of Tulsi, it means that they still didn't have those protection systems to prevent them from offending Vaishnavas.
Yeah, they had not, well see, they didn't have the blessings of the Vaishnavas. Fortunately, they didn't offend anybody, so they didn't have any demerits, but they hadn't gotten what's required, that dust of the Vaishnavas on their head. Anyway, it's not a crime to have imperfect or incomplete realization. It's a crime to be offensive against the Lord and the Vaishnavas. It's a crime to remain in complete ignorance. But if you have partial realization, you know, that's not considered criminal. It means you're on the path to perfection. Yes?
On the other hand, this is also a statement that unless a person who are not the glories of Vaishnavas, then he cannot commit an offense. In a sense, only Vaishnavas can
commit an offense. Unless you know the glories, you can't commit an offense?
Yeah, this one statement is about the holy name of Vaishnavas. Unless we really know the glories of Vaishnavas, then we can't. Sankhetsin Parihasim Vastu Vyanamava, a person who doesn't know the glories of the holy name, he cannot commit Namaparad.
That's Namaparad, but I wonder whether you, I see, you can't offend a Vaishnava if you don't know that he's a great person. But can't people offend Vaishnavas
in
complete ignorance? But in
general, if a person doesn't have faith and devotion to service, like a complete materialist, then to commit an
okay, well, you can say it's not an aparad because aparad is faulty devotional service, and they're doing no service at all. They're complete materialists, so they're not doing aparad, they're doing sin.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's very sinful to mistreat a Vaishnava, even if you don't know what he is.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not aparad because it's not rad at all. It's not any rad.
In that sense, in personal, it's like the father's problem to commit Vaishnava aparad because he didn't know the words of Vaishnava.
But impersonalists are supposed to be educated people. They read all the Shastras. They associate with Vaishnavas. They sometimes pretend to be Vaishnavas and give Bhagavat Saptahas. with their Tarila and Tilak, they're given Bhagavat Saptaha. So they're not in ignorance. Most, you know, some, many of them are, but not all of them. Some of them know what's what, and still they're offensive. That's much worse. Yes?
Yes, the moment you're talking about that in previous departments of attending so many KGB and so on agents, they harassed devotees and we can see that so many of them practically they got such reactions because of this behavior.
They got bad reactions?
Yeah, there was very bad reactions. Like,
did some of them become devotees?
No.
No? No KGB? No KGB agents became devotees?
It looks like that they didn't know the glories of devotees, but still
Most of them became devotees, yes.
And then they got reactions.
Then they got reactions. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so, and then I also have a question about the anger. Srila Prabhupada, he's committed to the 315, so to one, it looks like that he takes another angle of this anger.
Yes.
He takes that Umana's anger was a manifestation of their devotional service. He explains that one can use anger in devotional service.
Yeah.
And the particular one sentence, a liberated person is that, okay, the difference between the anger of an ordinary person and that of a liberated person is that an ordinary person becomes angry because his senses desires are not being fulfilled, whereas a liberated person, like the Kumaras, becomes angry when restricted in the discharge of the duties of a They want to see Krishna, and they waited for food to just see Krishna temple. So it looks like it was not only created by the Lord, but
that's, I don't think that's contradictory. You know, the situation is that they're not actually offensive. And there's two different reasons for it, but the same, the effect is the same, that the Kumara's anger is actually appropriate. It's appropriate for two different reasons. One is that it was imposed upon them by Yogamaya. It wasn't their fault. Second was that it's actually their devotional service to become angry. I think both are consistent. You know, you can be engaged in devotional service and also be controlled by Yogamaya. Definitely. Not that everybody that's controlled by Yogamaya is a devotee, acting as a devotee. A demon may be affected by Yogamaya to do something. But if you're a devotee, then you're serving the Lord, but also some things you do are involuntary because Yogamaya makes you do them. And therefore the anger can be explained both ways. I think it's, you know, without being contradictory.
At the same time, you can see the behavior of the devotee when he has some obstacle in his devotional service.
Yes.
He doesn't take it as an external obstacle. He becomes more humble. He takes it on his own, his congregation.
If he's mature. Otherwise, he gets angry.
So
if he's not mature.
So we can assume that for the Kumaras, it was a national reaction to what they didn't advance the devotees yet. They just became devotees
because they were neophytes. They got it because they were immature. They got maybe.
But they're giving us an example that was one of GPS for guys. They're giving us an example
of neophyte devotees.
Yeah, not of devotees because he quotes these for candidates as candidates for devotional service.
Yeah, but elsewhere, I think the term is Kanishtha Adhikaris, Kanishtha Bhaktas. In the commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti, he calls these are four kinds of Kanishtha
Bhaktas. Yeah. They're not even devotees, they're just about to become ones, as far as I understand.
I think we got several reasons why they got angry, several explanations of why they got angry. I think they're all consistent. Yes?
So, they're just trying to put it all in the unification theory that the Lord generally uses, looks like it's just in the Lord generally uses his immature devotees for such purposes as manifesting anger, and he uses them to help other devotees who are mature to progress. Like the example of Indra and Richard, where Indra was the one who gave him a hard time, and just so much attained his result, and Indra was fast in the mature world, but he was also a devotee, the mature one. So the Lord has to use both of them.
Well, sometimes, yes, generally, but sometimes very advanced devotees, even Shakyamesha avatars, get angry, like Parashuram. I think, Shakyamesha avatar, according to Lagu Bhagavatam, he's a jiva, but he got plenty angry. Yeah, and he's perfect. Yeah. So maybe generally, immature devotees are manifesting anger, but sometimes the biggest anger comes from the perfect devotees. Yes.
But I have a problem with the statement that Krishna is not manifest to the
Raskas.
Krishna
is, what is it? Krishna is what? Not manifest?
He's not manifest to the Raskas. Because who could be more of a Raskas
than Sushil Bhakti Shukla and
Hiranyakashipu? Who?
And yeah. Is Krishna manifested? Manifested to them?
Well, I think by rascal here we mean the materialists and the impersonalists. But Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha are actually devotees acting as demons. So they're not ordinary rascals. Otherwise the Lord would have just sent a brick to fall on their head. He wouldn't have appeared. You know, ordinary, real rascals, those who are just not, they're all interested in Krishna or the devotees. Krishna disposes them through the material energy.
Okay.
That's real rascals. These are, I don't know if I call Kashipur and Hiranyaksha are rascals. They're something, they're in a different category.
But the mere fact that they are acting as rascals, they are rascals.
Well,
the
thing is, rascal is not an exactly defined philosophical term. I don't see a definition of rascal in the Shastras. It's probably used in Indian, American English, rascal is cute, the little rascals. But in India, you call somebody a rascal, that means you're insulting him heavily. Buddha, yeah. And Buddha simply means bewildered, actually. Then Prabhupada, I guess Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati glossed it as jackass. But Buddha doesn't mean ass, it means bewildered, actually. To be generous about it. So when Krishna says Buddha, he's not saying, jackasses every time. That's not what he means by it. And rascal Prabhupada took from English, but he took it from Indian English, where it's a big insult. Somebody who's a rascal is like useless nonsense. So it's a little hard to argue whether these big demons are rascals, because we don't have an exact definition of the term. It's just being used poetically. From English, and we don't, it doesn't correspond to anything particular, any exact term in Sanskrit. We should move on to one more question.
It's also about the area, but J.M.J. they spoke Omaras or Intermediate. So, what was the reason for them to do it? Because, it is explained that today behavior was something like a principle of Shiva. Today behavior wasn't according to Lord's desire. So it means that Krishna wanted to see Omaras and Devakutra. But why he wanted to see them? Because they were Brahmanas or because they became the ones?
How do you say it wasn't according to the Lord's desire?
Their behavior was not according to the desire. It's one of the previous verses in this section.
Well, yeah, but other things that are said later seem to show that it was his desire, actually his arrangement. Jiva Goswami says that it was the Lord's own arrangement that this happened. And therefore it wasn't a defense, because it happened according to the Lord's desire. We just read that, 22. So maybe the statement that it was against his desire is just saying that, but it's not really true. It looks like it was against his desire. And he responded. You came and fought with the demons and killed them as if they were enemies. But it was just a sport. It was just Leela.
Mm. In the verse 30, in this section, it said, Jyavihasi Bhagavat Pratipula Shiva. Bhagavat Pratipula Shiva. They are these two keepers there. Those whose Bhagavat Pratipula, whose Shiva behavior, it was contrary to the desire of the Lord.
But even that, but it's like, it's more convoluted than that. They developed an inimical attitude, unfavorable to the Lord, by the Lord's desire. Yes, they were acting against the Lord, and the Lord doesn't like that when people act against him, especially his own servants. But actually, he arranged that. It's by his desire that they act against his desire.
So, although Krishna wanted to see Kumaras, but in order to send J.M.J.
Well, he saw them. He did see them. The arrangement was made. But the thing is, he didn't want to keep the four Kumaras in Vaikuntha, to let them just walk in and stay. And anybody who goes there doesn't come back again. So he couldn't let them all the way in. Because, first of all, before they became transformed, they weren't qualified to stay. And because, they're going to go back and preach in the material world. So he wanted to see them, but he didn't want to have them actually enter Vaikuntha. So he made that arrangement by having them get into a quarrel with the gatekeepers.
Okay.
Yeah, it's complicated. Yes.
Not explanation that before they didn't let have blood, what should they mean?
Yes. But you know, that they have also been an arrangement of the Lord. Okay, let's look at 24. We're discussing how those who are Brahman realization shouldn't get disturbed. So therefore, when the Kumaras seem to get disturbed, it must have been something else going on. So, Shruyate Chanyatra, Brahma Jusham, Avikshipta Chittatvam. We hear elsewhere that those who take pleasure in Brahman are never disturbed in their hearts. Okay, we get other evidence of that. Tata Saptame Sri Narada Vakyam, as Sri Narada says in the seventh canto, Kamadibir Anavidam Prashantakila Vidyat Chittam Brahma Sukaspristam Naivotishte Dakarhichit. When one's consciousness is uncontaminated by material lusty desires, it becomes calm and peaceful in all activities, for one is situated in eternal blissful life. It never again becomes agitated. Iti tatapi teshan Sri Bhagavat Ananda Krishna Chittatvam Uchyate. Nonetheless, it has been said that the sages' hearts were attracted by the bliss of the divine personality of Godhead. Okay, now, their minds never become distracted. Avikshipta. The minds of self-realized sages never become distracted. We're getting to another discussion now. Minds of liberated sages should never get distracted, but the four Kumaras were distracted by the bliss of Bhagavan. That's apparent contradiction. Tatapi, Tesham, Sri Bhagavad Ananda Krishna, Evam Anyesham Api Admaramanam Tadvishatram Shuyate. The same is heard about other self-satisfied sages in such statements as Swasukha Nibrita Chetas Tadvyudas Jnanya Bhavo Vyajita Ruchira Lila Krishna Sadaha. Who's that about? Although in the beginning he was absorbed in the happiness of Brahman realization, Shukadi, and was living in a secluded place, giving up all other types of consciousness, he became attracted by the pleasing, most melodious pastimes of Sri Krishna. No disturbance of the mind, no distraction, if you're liberated, except you might be distracted by hearing about Krishna. Commentary. As perfect sages, the Kumaras are never in danger of any kind of material disturbance. Nonetheless, they became excited by the attractions of the Supreme Lord and His service. Such turbulence in the mind is not material. The verse beginning Swasukha Nipita, spoken by Suta Goswami, near the end of Srimad Bhagavatam, glorifies Srila Shukadev, whom his father Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa empowered to speak the Bhagavatam to King Parikshit. Okay, comments? Questions? Yes?
Just a few technical things. Maybe it's already fixed in the file. Here it says King Parikshit. In all the file. Oh, it's here. Okay. In the first.
You mean the end of the commentary?
Oh, okay. It's something normal in the fact. In the first lines of the translation.
Yes.
For 78:24, we hear elsewhere that those who are so are is repeating the twice.
It's not there now.
Okay,
it's already fixed.
And also in the fourth line.
Wait. Those who are.
Who are taking pleasure.
Oh no, the R doesn't belong there. Yeah. The R goes. Okay, I fixed it. Okay.
And also in the fourth line, the beginning of the sentence, it is never again becomes agitated so easily.
Yeah.
It is never again. It is never again agitated. It never again. Well, take out the is. It never again becomes agitated. Got it. Okay? Thank you. Oh. When I read it, did I read it like that?
You read it correctly. That's what I
see. I skipped over the word. I didn't even notice the wrong word. Okay.
I thought this is maybe an older version of my
brain. It was an older version of my brain. Okay. Yes?
Can one may say that, okay, we have assumed that Kumaras couldn't have become agitated for material reasons because they were liberated, but so burned the four doorkeepers to energize so their anger at their agitation, because it says there in the Bible they were agitated, was not material either, so it was countable blame now.
You could argue that, yeah.
So in other words, that proves that if Kumaras couldn't have been agitated for material reasons, then what to speak of Jaya?
It was in relationship with Krishna. It was part of his pastimes, and after they get cursed, it continues to be. They continue to participate in his pastimes, but not favorably. So it's also argued that the behavior and attitude of those demons is not pure, is not proper devotional service. But you can still say it's not material, but it's Pratikula, so it's not pure devotional service. But Krishna wanted that, so it's not material.
But impure devotees, they're pure devotees, Jaya and Jaya.
Well, let's say they're pure devotees, but they fell down into the material world. They fell down from their, you know, from their pure status. You have to say that.
It's mentioned that this was due to their offense towards the election.
Yes. But, as I mentioned before, it may be that that was also arranged by Narayan to let that happen. Usually, residents of Vaikuntha don't go around insulting Lakshmi. It doesn't happen in Vaikuntha. All right, 25. Anything else? We can move on. Okay, 25. Now, okay, we're going to get a Purva Paksha. Let the Mayavadis comment on this now. Ata loka sangrahar daivai sha te sham bhakti krakriya prachina samskara vashad va. Now, it might be suggested that their devotional behavior was only for the purpose of setting an example for the people in general, or else it was due to traces of old conditioning. You know, they're Jivan Mukta, so they're acting like sentimental devotees because of their past karma. It's just they're using up their prarabdha karma by acting like devotees. The argument may be given by the Mayavadis. What's our answer to it? Naivam. No, you're wrong. Ubayatrapi vaso yata parikritam madira madandaha iti vat. Tatra avesh asambhavat. No, it is not like this. Because in both cases, they could not have become engrossed in that devotional service. Yeah, if they're just setting an example, then they wouldn't have really been very interested. They would just go through the external motions. They wouldn't really feel anything. If they were just setting an example, but they were actually disinterested in personalists. And if they were just acting according to their previous material conditioning, acting as sentimentalists, then they wouldn't have absorbed them, they wouldn't have fascinated them and caused them so much ecstasy. Similar to the idea that a person blinded by the intoxication of wine is not even aware of whether he is dressed. That's someone who's actually absorbed, engrossed. So they could not have, they wouldn't have been engrossed in such a way, and it seems that they were. Like an intoxicated person doesn't even know if he's wearing any clothes. Four Kumaras were in that condition, they wouldn't have been in such a beyond themselves like that if it was just making a show for people in general or acting because on the basis of previous material conditioning. Anyway, we see Drishyate tu anyatrana vesha. We see how they were not at all engrossed in anything else, according to the statement. Anything else other than Brahman. Should I say that? I'll say that in commentary. Okay. They weren't absorbed in anything else. We see that in the statement. Manasa me sutta yushmat purvaja sanakadayaha cherur vihaya sa lokam lokeshu vigatas prihaha ityabhitanat. We see how they were not at all engrossed in anything else according to the statement. My four sons, Sanaka, Sanatana, Sanandana, and Sanat Kumar, who were born from my mind, are your predecessors. They were traveling throughout the material and spiritual skies, completely free from the desire. Okay, we're out of time. I think we'll stop here. Anyway, it's going to go on. Jiva Goswami is going to mention that, okay, they weren't absorbed in anything. You know, they had no obsession. They were filled, free from all desire. But we see them becoming absorbed, obsessed by the Supreme Lord when they meet Him. Something changes. All right. We'll continue with this paragraph tomorrow. Tomorrow's Wednesday. Thank you all. Glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Kiri Jaya.